You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 970. In this show, we're going to be discussing all things performance and WordPress, plus AI. We've got to talk about AI as well. We've got a fantastic guest. We've got Rancus Devese here. I have probably butchered his name, but I don't think for me it's a terrible attempt. But he is the co-founder of Scamfully. It's a service that will monitor your WordPress website and also tell you if it's performing the way that you want. It's going to be a great discussion. So, Rancus, would you like to give us a quick 10-15 second intro, and then when we go into the main part of the show, we can go more into your background?
Sure. Rancus Devese, and I'm a longtime WordPress user of mostly complex and weirdly fast and you know, I think the word is complex. Complex sites and builds that I've built with my agency over the years. And I've, as such, focused a lot on everything having to do with best practice in terms of tools, tooling, and, of course, the output of the WordPress performance itself.
That's fantastic. And I've got my ever patient co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Mañana No Más. We focus largely on learning and membership style websites. And I work directly with the good folks over at WP Tonic as well.
That's fantastic. Before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show and this discussion, I've got a couple messages, a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hey, running a business is tough. You shouldn't have to worry about your website, too. With Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress, you get lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 expert support from real humans. Switch to Kinsta and see site speeds improve by up to 200% with effortless migrations and powerful, easy-to-use dashboard. Join over 120,000 other businesses who also trust Kinsta. Get your first month for free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
We're coming back, folks. Also want to point out we've got a fantastic curated list of special offers from the sponsors, plus a list of the best WordPress plugins and services that will save you a load of time, my beloved WordPress professionals. You can go, where do you go to get all these goodies? Just go over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could my WordPress professionals ask for? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get on that page. They just love that, actually, because they just listen for that, actually. They're not children, are they? But so let's go in. So how did you get into the world of web design development and then especially in WordPress? What led to this dreadful decision, Rampus?
Dreadful. I don't know about that. So in 2002, I started doing in-company training when I was working for a company and project management. And then transitioned to doing that outside of the company for my own. So I started my own business and I needed a website because I needed to be at least, show off my services and topics that I could do trainings on. And I asked a friend to build me a website. He built me one. And about 2 weeks later, I asked him again, like, can you change this, and that? I had like a list of four or five things. And he's like, sure. But that's about the same amount of work. So it's going to cost you pretty much the same money again. And I go like, well, hold on. There's got to be a smarter way to do this. Landed on Mumble. Started doing more and more. Yeah. Yeah. You can. I think you need a Hail Mary here and there now for that, Jonathan, to work. But
you're bringing back glorious memories.
So from Mambo, I transitioned into Juma. And right around the time I was, I built my first site for myself. And as soon as I had that, another friend of mine said, "That's a cool site. Can you build me one?" And I go, like, "Sure, I've just done it for myself. I can do it for somebody else." And within the year, I was still doing some training, but essentially my full working days were filled with creating sites. And then in 2006, in 2005, I started playing with WordPress. And in 2006, early 2006, I got serious because we then had proper pages. So that meant a little CMS. And it was perfect for what I needed for most of my clients. And I started building WordPress and haven't stopped ever since.
Fantastic. Any experience with Drupal? You throw everything else.
I've played with it and I think I've built one or two sites with it, but it just never rang true for me. Like, I understand how to set it up and play with it. But I found what drew me into WordPress and actually playing with it is understanding very quickly what type of controller that I had. So that started with just CSS playing and you know, making a site look the way I wanted based off of a template. And I used a lot of Brian Gardner's stuff in the early days as sort of the starting point. And then at some point I was like, you know, I understand enough to build something myself. And I did, but I've never really had the calling to look into Drupal. I played with Typo. I've played with I see you doing a lot of Hail Marys there, but
well, you're bringing up I'll be partially sarcastic with the Drupal question, but there we go. But thanks so much. You brought back glorious memories to me. Yeah. That's more. I'm not any hair harping there. My sound isn't the normal quality as some of the sound Nazis like Matt Dias would say. But I am traveling, folks. I am on the road. But my commitment to you is such that I still do these podcasts. So don't send emails about the sound quality. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I was just... It's funny because when I talk to folks on the show, it seems like we have very similar starts and similar timelines. I started in WordPress in 2004. I started WordPress 2004, I went through the Dreamweaver, the Joomla, and stuff like that as well. Earlier, when you were coming into the show, you were saying that you know you build more complicated things, and I think there's an interesting discernment that happens along the way where. Yeah, could you build a 4 or 5 page marketing-based brochure style website and knock that out? Absolutely. And I think the attraction for a lot of people, what was it that led you to go from, yeah, I can build these simple marketing style brochure websites to using WordPress to build more complicated things? What made you fall in love with going to the next levels?
So first of all, the way my brain works is I need a constant challenge. So I would say yes to a project that, you know, I'm sure you've heard that saying, whatever the client asks, can you build this or that? Your default answer is yes. Yeah. And I started saying yes to a lot of stuff I'd never heard of how to do. Just because I know that's how my brain works. It needs the challenge. And I found ways to, you know, learn the thing that I needed to know to be able to fulfill the request. And in the early days, I've asked other people to build me small solutions. But in the early days, there was also a lot more sharing going on of solutions to do certain things inside of WordPress. So it was relatively easy to figure it out as I went along. And what really propelled it for me were custom taxonomies and custom post types. So that combined with CMB at the time, which later became CMB2, which now for me is ACF. But that really, that's around 2010, WordPress version 3.0 made most of those tools fully available And yeah, then started building sites that had like 10 different custom post types hooking into each other and doing weird stuff. Dozens of custom taxonomies. And, you know, that's when it became fun for me. Like, okay, this is really, really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You can build something interesting. So I'm an avid reader.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can think in data structures and like how things interconnect and how are the tools inside of WERP is how they can allow you to build the thing that looks too complex, but really it's just you understanding the data. You know, that's when the fun part starts.
Nice. So our next question was kind of like, will WordPress be able to adapt to the new realities of AI, you know, in the next year, 18 months, 24 months? But I think that question is particularly insightful or has the opportunity for insight with you. You author that newsletter. I'm a fan of it. I read it every week, the Within WordPress.
Thanks.
So I'm assuming that you have a little more insight with AI, what's coming, what's not coming, because people kind of share stuff with you. But yeah. what kind of thoughts do you have on the new realities of AI going forward with us in WordPress?
So the trend that we all saw as soon as AI became, let's call it 18 months ago, became somewhat more mature. The trend we all saw was that everybody thought of AI as the thing to enhance your whatever product. And we've seen a lot of those types of solutions, right? Where there is a sprinkle of AI doing this and a sprinkle of AI doing that. And there's even a plugin now called Hide AI by Andrew Hoyer. I don't know his last name pronunciation, but he released that this week. And it's a good example of fighting that wave, because that's the wave of we're just throwing stuff at the wall and we'll see what sticks, because AI, and it's the buzzword and we need it. I think we're slowly but surely moving into a phase where the maturity of AI and what it can do becomes more of a, wait, there's stuff that's very laborious for us to do, very complicated for us to do, but here's an AI who really doesn't care how much data and context we throw at it. It's going to figure it out because that's what it's built to do. And I see that trend happening more and more. So meaning very, very concretely, I see more and more solutions becoming smart about how they implement AI without necessarily calling it AI. If that makes any sense. It's less of, hey, look, we have AI. Great, everybody has AI now. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing is, how are you leveraging AI to do the thing you do? And we see that on every level, including the new WordPress AI team. I had a podcast with James LePage, and one of the things I was curious about, you're saying this team is going to cover everything AI inside of WordPress, but what does that mean? And he goes, well, it's not just inside WordPress. We also have this huge bucket of tickets and issues, which are very hard to herd as a human. But, you know, if we figure out how to have AI look at that and then combine and close the tickets as it figures out these are related, these are not, this and this and that. Wow. What can AI else do? Not, that's the type of thinking I see more and more.
Nice. Jonathan?
Yeah, how do you... Because obviously... Its strength, one of the strengths of WordPress and also one of its weaknesses is the plugin architecture.
Yeah.
Free or premium. You had these separate Lego bricks and you combine them and you can do things that at a cost and at a speed of setup that you couldn't do if you were attempting to do the same thing with a full custom coded solution, which has its own problems as well. But where does plugins, which is a key part of the WordPress platform, where do you see that in 18 months where you could just tell AI language or coding platform. I want these features, and it just produce the code for you to some extent. Where in like in a year, 18 months, where do you see the plugin part of WordPress being?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think it's a little bit in line with my previous answer, where we're reaching a level of maturity now in how we're using AI, and we'll see that in all the areas that WordPress touches. So let's start with assuming that of 100 people in the world, maybe one or two actually knows AI intimately. I'm sure there's more people actually using it in various ways, but intimately understanding AI. If you then turn that those two people into 100 people, so 2% becomes 100% again. I think we are slowly seeing more people jump in the pool of let's deep dive into AI. And that inherently has the result of people understanding how to better use it, meaning there's ideas that are too complex or just too laborious to do in the plugin that you're building. But if I use AI as an assistant to help me debug, to help me think, to help me write out structure or incorporate best practices or make sure whatever I'm building is secure, scalable, performant, thinks of accessibility and all of those things, you can just tell it. Now, you'll still need to understand what it is that you're building, right? So you still need to understand code. You need to understand the principles of scaling and performance and accessibility, all of those things. That doesn't change, but it allows you to much faster iterate through what would this function look like? What if I can combine this and then have that? Like, that's like 2 weeks of work. But what if I have the AI play with it and do it in Cursor or Bolt or whatever and have it spin it up for me, and then I can check the validity of it, and then I have my proof of concept, and then I can then work on having AI help me turn from a proof of concept type of plugin or addition or whatever into an actual fully fledged, fully integrated, thought of all the different areas where you can type a new release. And I think we're moving into where that pool of people thinking in this particular way is growing rapidly currently, because we're well past the I'm gonna just wait this out for a moment and just kind of look at it and see when I need to jump in. I see people jumping in left and right. People who have been kind of just looking at it from the generational type of stuff. So, create me a blog post that talks about this and that. Sure. But to have AI, so we're reaching the phase now where that group of people is leaning in on AI and saying, look, I understand if I give you specific commands and in a certain chain, and I take maybe 2 hours to configure my prompt to be absolutely perfect, then my output is in maybe 4 hours, I've done what normally a week would cost. So I think we're going to see a lot of speeding up of ideas and things like that. And I see that for myself as well. I have two side projects in my head that I wanted to do something with for the longest. And, when you're waiting for a call and there's like 5-10 minutes to kill, what I now do, what I force myself to do, is I have a separate project inside ChatGPT where I'm just brainstorming with the AI as I'm waiting. So I keep throwing stuff at it. Okay, great. But I also wanted to do this and I also want to do that. So I have an idea where there's a whole bunch of complex custom post types that are with permalinks as parent, child, and grandchild, which is tedious to write out and test out. But, I keep throwing stuff at it, and then it figured that out, and I'm then throwing stuff a lot, what I would like to see in the custom post types and what I want the functionality. So I can go about it much more granularly and actually have a result. And that's just me playing with stuff. But what if I sit down and seriously do that for 8 hours a day, weeks on end? You end up with a hyper productivity that is actually going to propel all different types of software releases, WordPress plugins included.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said here. What about the, there's a lot of discussion like this 5-page brochure site. A lot of people say if you're in that space, because I'm bombarded, you know, it's totally because I'm over 40, I'm well over 40. I'm getting all these YouTube adverts where, you know, you're only using AI, you're only using chat, but you could build a fully functioning business website in 2 minutes by using AI. And there's a group of influencers on YouTube and there's platforms that allow you to do that, but it's a little bit more complicated. And also, I was thinking, what's the real difference than using a WordPress theme or using Wix or Squarespace and using one of their themes and just using some AI content? I haven't really clarified the real difference between what's already there in some ways. What's your thoughts about it all?
I think we have to accept that there are certain sites. There's a certain group of people that are going to use whatever is the easiest thing for them to start using. So if they get their hands on an AI and that allows them to build a 5, 6, 7 pager with just some visual input and play around, and it's fine if it's static and build off of whatever JavaScript library, and you know they know how to FTP it in and move it over there, and it then works. That's fine. That sort of stuff has been happening for ages anyway. That group will go a little bit larger now, sure. But I think the strength of WordPress is and always has been its flexibility. Meaning, if you wanted to, you can do extremely highly regarded architecture, structural WordPress sites that are just absolutely blazingly modern, use PHP 8.4 to the best of their ability. And, you know, you can make an incredibly high-end type of solution if you wanted to. Now, the vast majority is not going to use that and just wants to set up your site and, sure, add functionality here and there and or run WooCommerce and all of those things. And you still can do that as well. So at some point, whoever starts with a small site and just figures out how to play with it and have it, they're just going to continue to do that. But there's I think the move from I'm working on this static thing to I'd like something more flexible because I do want to add or change certain things more easily, you'll end up with a CMS. And whenever you make the move to a CMS, I think it's quite logical still to continue using WordPress. Sure, there's Wix and Squarespace and all of those types of solution. And they have a certain flexibility, but I think it serves a slightly different crowd. Once you've been exposed to WordPress in terms of what it allows you to do in terms of flexibility and an absolute control over your data, your design, your any choice for any type of functionality. I think WordPress has always been in the best position. I think it still is. That said, Wix and Squarespace, they are going to take up a portion of the people starting those brochure sites off of static stuff they can build with AI. Sure. But, you know, bottom line, I don't think WordPress is going anywhere soon in terms of not disappearing because the tools we have to our availability, the ecosystem is just too large, maybe even too large to fill. Who knows? But it's for sure not something that that's worrying me.
Yeah, before we go for our break, I totally agree with you. But I just want to add a little bit and get your input, and then we go to break. is that I think there's, for obvious reasons, a lot of attention on Wix, on Squarespace, on Spotty, on Shopify.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think one of the biggest attack vectors at WordPress is that if you go into any, and I do another show with Kurt, and I think we talked about this in our other show, is there's a whole, if you go into any industry sector, any in specific industry that has an online presence, you will find SaaS platforms in that industry sector that also offer a website as part of a CRM or other online functionality in a package. Sure.
Yep.
And I think they have been gradually taking away market share very gradually from what an agency might build out for a local client using WordPress. Those type of customers go for the kind of SaaS solution.
Yeah, the website as a service solutions.
Yeah, where with AI, the cost of using something like WordPress and building a bespoke semi-custom solution will go down, because a lot of customers, they're okay with the SaaS solution, but it doesn't quite fit what they're really looking for. But I don't know if I'm deluding myself there. It could be totally different. What do you think before we go to Mike?
So websites as a service is for sure something we're seeing more and more. It's the nicheification of websites as a whole, I'd say. If you wanted to and you'd only want to focus on websites for plumbers, I'm sure if you start researching 15, 20, 25 plumbers, you have a good idea of what they need. And if you then build a solution, you market that solution and you then host it. That's something we're seeing a lot. So I don't have data to back this up, but my gut says a lot of these type of solutions are having to consider either fully build the whole thing custom or use something like GradeSuite, and then that is a solution that lives inside of WordPress, plays to the advantage of WordPress, but also introduces the whole set of features that you would need in a website as a service solution. So if you continue to throw money at every single niche that you think you can turn into a website as a software, as a WAS solution, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. And at some point, I think, how far do you want to take this? I certainly on this side of the pond, I haven't seen any huge examples of where that really is making a dent. So my assumption, again, I don't have any data to back this up, but my assumption is that these types of solutions are just not making a dent yet.
I think they're pushed much harder, if you like to say, but I've got no...
Sure, but there's money.
...credible data to support my statement. But I think if you look at any industry, any sector, there's software as a service, and WASP, WordPress as a service, had initially some traction, but it faded a bit. But I think that was more down to... It's tricky. You can do it. And I think Lifter LMS has done a good job of providing a lot of functionality, but not being a full WASP, not being a full, still being open enough that it will work with other core WordPress plugins. I haven't formulated all this clearly in my own mind, to be truthful.
Yeah, I think Chris Badgett is, it's a I think it's a valid choice for him to make. Do I include the whole, you know, the WAS, the hosting that, and everything that comes with it? I think it's an interesting one because it makes sense, but I don't necessarily see a lot of, I don't come across a lot of those types of sites other than gyms, I have to say, because there's a lot of gym sites that are just part of, oh, you want our booking system for,
personal training.
Personal training, all that sort of stuff. We have that for you. And we also have a website for you. So I see those. Virtua Gym, for instance, is one of those services that it's adding. And, but, you know, I also built four websites for personal trainers, and they are clearly on WordPress because they have realized how much more freedom that gives them. So they're like, yeah, okay, it's going to cost me a little bit of money to get the plugin that does the same type of booking, and there's a subscription thing I need, sure. You know, and there's a few other things, but I'm not seeing loads of people moving off of WordPress or making a dent in that type of growth. Again, I don't have any data for this, but this is, you know, anecdotal in terms of I see and who I talk to at WordCamps and all that. So,
okay. Well, thanks for that. We're going to go for our mid-break. We've got a couple more messages on our sponsors who are much appreciated. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. Also want to point out, we've got a great free resource. That's the WP Tonic YouTube channel. We've got interviews like this. We also sometimes have bonus content. Plus, we've got a load of other content that is helpful to the WordPress professional. Reviews, the latest plugins, marketing advice. We cover a load of stuff on the WP Tonic YouTube channel. And it's a great way of supporting WP Tonic. So go over there and subscribe. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I'm just, you know, kind of biting my tongue the whole time we've been talking about the subjects, you know, with the AI. And we hear about, you know, sometimes the AI code is bloated and it's this and it's that. And I'm thinking to myself the whole time, we're talking to a guy who focuses on performance, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to performance in WordPress, what are the things that people really need to consider? And I should clarify, like, I've been horribly distracted lately. Like, I'm distracted by Maroonies, this new thing that's going to help give people front-end access or to make requests for changes on their website. So I talked to Zach about Maroonie. I'm one of the people that Kevin got money from right away for Etch. So I'm trying to learn how to use Etch in the background. You know, there's all these things happening. And at the same time, I'm like, you know,
I don't know how you do all this, because I feel freaked out and I don't do it hardly any of what you're doing. I don't know how you do it, actually.
Well, I think to myself, not only is it the budget, but you have to think, I'm learning all this stuff, but at the end of the day, I still want to have a website that performs well and meets the needs of the client and the page speed and all that kind of stuff. But I'm also packing all this other junk in. So there's got to be a balance. And now I finally got you on camera to ask you what your thoughts are on all these tools and when do we say no and when do we say yes, or do we just buy more hosting?
So getting a WordPress site fast is if you start Googling this particular topic, you'll find a great many tutorials, and they're all pointing essentially to make sure you're not using using as few plugins as possible. Make sure your assets are optimized, so your CSS, your JavaScript, your images, all that sort of stuff. And get yourself some optimized CSS while you're at it. And, you know, but that's pretty much the focus they have. As it so happens, I have softly pre-launched my first WordPress course, which is called Make WordPress Fast. And you'll find it at withinwp.com. In it, I have 25 modules. 25 modules that discuss all the things that go into how do I build a performant website. Because it's for sure more than mind your plugins, optimize your assets. There's a lot more layers. There's a lot of layers of caching. There's a lot of layers of optimization. But there's also a lot of layers of access, meaning the first thing you can optimize for is DNS. As simple as that. And I've seen sites where it was wonky DNS, adding a second, almost a second to the just to time the first byte element. The biggest thing in terms of understanding performance is understanding, first of all the layers, making all the right choices per layer, or at least understanding the choices you have. And then as you end up with the theme and the plugins that you're using, every single choice needs to be weighed. And most people just skip that. They just build and at the end they go like, let me finish the output. And the biggest problem with that is that, because fixing the output, we can, you know, let's call that caching. Caching doesn't make your site fast.
No.
Like, not at all. And people don't fully grasp that, because what caching does, it optimizes the output that your site produces. So that's HTML with its assets in a rendered fashion. It then stores it as flat HTML on server level. If you're doing it smart, you're doing it in front of your site. So at the edge, we call that. So there's solutions like NitroPack or Cloudflare APO that help you do that. But you still haven't fully fixed how to build for performance. So that means if you want to do this right, every single commit that you make, whether that is off, absolutely just pure code added to the code base, or a full plugin, or a change that is significant in any way, shape, or form in terms of settings that you alter, every single one of those choices that you make, you should validate for its performance impact. If you don't, you have no clue where it's at. Now, when you don't do this and you have, here's a site and I need to optimize it now, you have to backtrace all the steps that have been made, all the choices that have been made. Yeah. So sometimes it's hosting. Sometimes it's a database design that just does not want to perform for this bulk of data. Sometimes it's a theme. If chances are high, if you get something off of ThemeForest, and I think most WordPress professionals know this, there's a large possibility that your theme is just not performant, or it introduces, you know, unwanted stuff. So every single, and it's tedious, but it's necessary. But every single decision you make in terms of what do I add to my site needs to have gone through your testing per change. Again, tedious, but let's say you spend 10 working days in building a site. Every single, at the end of the day, somewhere, you need to test for performance. Somewhere. Now, my course goes into what are the layers. My course goes into you understanding your choices in those layers. And my course goes into, so how do we debug? How do we figure out where stuff is doing the weird stuff? But yeah, you have to build with the mindset of, I want to do this in a performant way. It all starts there. It has to stop being, I'll slap some caching on it. Because if you're not aware, there's a thing called cache hit ratio, meaning of 100 requests your site processes, what is the percentage of sites that you are supposedly offering in a cached version, but they're not seeing a cached version. And you'll be shocked to learn how low that can be, especially if it's a member's site, as the types of sites that you're building, any site that requires a login, for instance, WooCommerce. In fact, WooCommerce and all other e-commerce solutions are even worse. But from the moment you add something to your cart, that's the moment the rest of the site cannot be cached.
Yeah.
So what are you optimizing for with your caching plugin if a very large portion of the traffic your site sees is uncacheable?
Yeah, on our end, we see a lot of clients that'll have multiple caching tools installed, not even recognizing that they're caching tools.
Yep.
And so we go through and to your point, if they're on a Lifter LMS website, a LearnDash, a WooCommerce, I mean, the site just starts locking up. People can't log in. They're seeing orders they didn't order. They're seeing courses they didn't sign up for. And people are frustrated and think the platform's broken. It's not the platform. It's what you're doing with it. You've got all this junk floating around.
Yep. Yep. I was advertising for a very long time. I was advertising a quick performance scan. And you could purchase that off of my site. And the vast majority of these sites had multiple page builders, like different ones, but
yeah,
working together in some way. Or, for instance, a one page builder, but then with 3, 4, 5 extensions that add something to the core of that page builder.
Yeah.
And people wonder why stuff gets slow. It's, you know, doesn't take a lot of time to fully scan through the site. And then I start, you know, chasing where does a particular thing come from or whatnot. That might take some time. But if I see 3 or 4 extensions to, for instance, Elementor, I know for a fact I have already found a large reason of why your site is slow. If you then also add Thrive to the mix for whatever reason, then yeah, sure, your site's going to be slow.
All right. Jonathan, over to you.
By this, these are some puns, Shelley. Who's getting the line? What's the time? I might do this in the bonus content, actually. If you're up for doing some bonus, do you have to clear? Do you have to go at the hour, or can you hang on?
I have a bit of time.
All right, Kirk's got to go at before the hour, but we can have some fun after. But yeah, I totally agree what you're saying, because it's just complicated. But there seems to be this, and it is important, don't get me wrong, you know, your hosting partner is important, but there seems to be a lot of stuff out there. It's solely about hosting. What you're pointing out is obviously so right. It's the plugins, it's the theme, it's the way the whole thing's been set up. There's a lot of various variables to it. Why do you think, I don't know if you agree what I'm just going to ask you, but there seems to be this total obsession around hosting. But what is hosting? There's all types of hosting out there using all sorts of different technologies. You've been in this game, you've been in kind of hosting yourself, so you know there's all sorts of hosting out there, isn't there?
There is. And so I think hosting, the bare service of just hosting, for that you can go anywhere and you can measure the performance. There's various tools out there that'll tell you exactly how performant your hosting environment is. And there's a good case to go with hosting environments that have, let's call it a high throughput, meaning a lot of database interactions is fine and a lot of file writes and stuff, IO is fine. And again, those are measurable, right? There's if you go to Kevin Ohashi's site, wphostingreview.com, I think it is, or otherwise reviewsignal.com, he'll show you the test that he does independent, so they don't pay. They don't tell him to pay attention to specific things and ignore other things. They go, just please test us. And he tests everybody in the exactly same way. And the results are, you know, as methodical as you can have the hosting results. So if you want to know how well the machinery works, that's a good way to start. But hosting is not just that. Hosting is also the tooling around it, the stuff that you can also use in conjunction with just the hosting. So for some people, that includes support. Like support, we can do that within a minute. And I go, I really don't care. Let them take their time. But I, want the answer to be an intelligent answer. I don't care for somebody to respond within a minute.
Low-grade quality, 24/7 support.
Exactly. So if that's all you're doing, then I think you're missing the opportunity to, you know, focus on the quality of the hosting and the stuff that goes around it to be at the absolute utmost highest level. So yeah, hosting is important, but most people choose hosting because of either the pricing or the level of support they get. But I think they should look at what is the raw performance here, what am I paying for that, and how easy is it for me to extend on it. So I look at other stuff. So
you're a WordPress professional, agency owner that's got a load of experience. The average business owner that likes WordPress, got used to using it and likes it.
They make different choices.
You know, how are they supposed to? And then you get some person say, well, don't you go to, and I'll make it clear, I've got no problem, not done me any harm, and say, go to Cloudflare, you know, not Cloudflare, Cloudways. And for the right type of individual, that I've dealt with them, and they expect you to be able to put your questions in a certain technical way.
Yep.
And they're not set up to deal with the average retail customer.
What I want to be clear about, it's fine, right? That's totally fine. Not every single type of hosting needs to be the same level of services they provide, focus on what type of clients, all that. I think hosting companies have a wonderful way of niching down into the crowd that they like to service. The price is going to be generally what you get what you pay for. I don't see really bad hosting asking $100 a month type of deals. I see the other way around, sure. So, you know, you're going to pick the hosting that matches your desires the most. Performance and speed is part of it. But I think the vast majority picks a host because of ease of dashboard, ease of tools they can use, monitoring and all that sort of stuff. Like, and that's fine. That's how it works. At a certain point, if your site is running into performance issues, that's the moment you start looking into, okay, well, what am I missing here? And I advocate for that moment to not be when the shit hits the fan, but for that moment to be while you're building it.
Yeah.
That's exactly the driver for why I created the course.
Nice. If we shift the conversation to community, and it's because you guys just had WordPress Europe, right? And then there's all kinds of activities going on. We had a press conf here. That was interesting. What do you think are like the major weaknesses or strengths of the WordPress community now? I didn't really get involved in the community till a few years ago, to be honest with you. I went to WordCamp US in San Diego, and that kind of launched me like both feet in on the community. Like I've bought and sold and paid for right there. But then I've noticed this last year, things have felt completely different.
Well, there's a lot that's happened in the last year. So I don't necessarily care too much to dive into that because as things are ongoing for the debacle between Automattic and WP Engine, I'm going to leave that be what it is. But what I am seeing is that the community as a whole is changing. And that was going on before. I've been very much part of the WordPress community very actively since 2008, co-founding WordCamp Netherlands, co-founding WordCamp Europe, and having been part of both organizing teams in a leading fashion as well as team leads and all that kind of stuff for 15 years. So I've seen what was a natural growth pattern for the community as the software grew. And I think the software is still kind of growing, but it's growing differently. I think what it's mostly growing into is a more professional approach. And if it's a more professional approach, that means a different profile of type of people that are into the community side of things, which I think is a natural thing to happen. And you can see the difference, for instance, between the US and Europe, but specifically in Asia. The level of enthusiasm that's happening in Asia is akin to what it was 7-8 years ago in Europe and the US. So, you know, whatever's happening now, I don't have the answers in terms of what's really happening and why are things happening. All I can do is look at it and as I'm talking to people at these events, get a gauge of how they perceive the thing we're visiting. And that for me mostly is there's an uptick in professionalism, which means there's a certain crowd that is less prone to come. We've also had the blip from 2020 to 2023, which also has, you know, forced us to reprioritize what are my priorities. And then when you find your new priorities, then where does going to an event and going to this and this and that? So, you know, I'm sure you've heard the expression, if you throw a frog into water and you start boiling it, the frog is going to stay put. If you throw a frog into boiling water, it's going to jump out right away. So what we've had, maybe not the best analogy here, but what we've had is we've been sitting in water that kept getting warmer. And then to make the analogy somewhat decent, the water was getting very nice, very comfortable. When there is no more fire heating up the water from 2020 to 2023, we got cold a little bit. We got scared a little bit. Look, hold on, what's going on here? Am I still consciously choosing to do the thing that I did on automatic? No pun intended. I think that sort of opened the door for people reevaluating their choices and, you know, where am I focusing my time? I have a suspicion it would have been just flattening out all the same, but slower if the blip hadn't happened. But yeah, I don't have data to back any of this. This is a gut feeling. This is what I hear people talk about at work camps in the hallway tracks and stuff like that. So,
yeah, but my personal thoughts were like, I don't see a lot of young people at the events. And so I started speaking at some of the high schools and community colleges and then asking direct questions in those talks about what's your exposure to WordPress? Do you know what open source is? And by and large, they're not even familiar with our platform, even though it runs 43% of the web. Like, they know how the internet works. They just don't really understand how it's built. And the schools aren't really filling people in at that level.
And don't forget, that is a generation that has grown up on closed platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Us three all here. I'm in a few weeks I'll be 52. So I've grown up on the internet. I saw it come from nothing, and I come from a place where privacy is much more a forethought instead of an afterthought. So open source and owning my own data is something that I hold very high. Now my kids still understand that concept. They're 18, 25, 27. But a lot of my nieces and those who call me uncle, I forget the word, but they just don't see it the same way. They are aware that if I point it out to them, they go like, I get it. But then, you know, when their accounts get deleted because they are just, you know, abusing the terms of service of the platform they're on, they go like, can you please help me figure it out? Because they understand I know a little bit more about the internet and how things work. And I go like, well, this is what happens when you build on somebody else's garden. And they go like, but what else should I do? Well, there's ways. So times have shifted in terms of what technology does and allows us to do, sure. But I think that particular part of why do we not see young people? They're not on our platforms, period. Yeah. So they're not much into websites just yet. They're into whatever their Snap says, whatever their WhatsApp says, whatever their, not even Facebook that much anymore, but Instagram for real, TikTok. And I use all of these platforms as well. But I don't understand how I'm interacting with it. Like nothing I save on Instagram or TikTok, I'm not going to ever assume is saved. I'm going to assume I lose my client, my account at some point for whatever something stupid I did. That's my base assumption. It's not my garden. So I can't assume that I'm going to be having my account and all my connections there. So what do? I make sure that whatever I find interesting there, I copy that, I screenshot that or whatever. You know, I bring it into my own system. I use Obsidian for that. That generation just does not see it yet. I think they will. I think they will hit a wall. They have to. But at a certain point, maybe it's the more mature world you end up in anyway. And those are websites. And those are other types of data structures. I just don't see them jumping into WordPress as quickly as everybody keeps saying, like, no, we should just bring in the youth more. You're not going to make that happen because we don't provide their platform. It's just simple as that. If we can have federated versions and everybody joins, like so TikTok, Instagram, Threads, whatever, and everybody joins the same protocol, so we have an equal fighting chance and we have a solution on top of WordPress that acts like it's, you know, one of those walled gardens, yeah, sure, you'll have potential. But we're, I feel miles away from being in that position.
Yeah.
Sorry for that rant, but yeah.
No. It's all good stuff. Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap up the podcast part of the show, but we have some bonus content. I'll give some of my own feedback and what Ramkus has just said there. But sorry, Ramkus. What's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
REMK.us.
All right. I'll make sure.
I cannot make it shorter.
I'll make sure it's all in the show notes. And Kurt, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and your thoughts and what you're up to?
For a personal connection, just hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm the only Kurt Von Onen on LinkedIn, so it's easy to find. And then business is Mañana No Más. Anything that's Mañana No Más typically leads back to me.
That's fantastic. So ask from you, Tribe, if you're getting value from this podcast, and we are getting more listeners and viewers, much appreciated. But if you're getting some value, why don't you consider going to YouTube, iTunes, or Spotify and leave a review, especially if you're using your phone app. It's really quite easy on both those platforms to leave a review, and it really does help the show to be publicized and new people to find it. And that helps me get better sponsors. So it's a win-win for you, and it means the show will continue. So if you could consider that, that would be well appreciated. We'll be back next week with another fantastic guest. Like I say, we're going to be doing some sponsored content, bonus content, which you will find the whole show plus the bonus on the WP Tonic YouTube channel. You see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.